There is a line in the book that I just love where David Hood refers to the Swampers as looking like a bunch of guys who would work at the grocery store. I love that because so many people, when they arrived in the Shoals, were shocked by who they saw. But these are really just four guys who were and still are talented musicians who were able to stay at home and make a living recording rather than touring.
Where did that name, the Swampers, come from?
There are a couple of different stories about who coined the term, but essentially it refers to that sort of swampy sound that you get when recording with these guys. You know, they always said if they were recording with Rod Stewart, they needed to sound like Rod Stewart's band. If they're recording with Aretha Franklin, they needed to sound like Aretha Franklin's band. But the sort of consistent thread is that really soulful, swampy sound that they created.
Of course, there were plenty of session musicians working in Nashville and Memphis. Was there something different about the Swampers?
Well, there are a couple of things that sort of stand out. I mean, you mentioned Nashville and Memphis, and Muscle Shoals is sort of in between those areas. And so there is a sonic influence kind of combining that rhythm and blues and the country into something distinctive. But also, the Shoals area had a little bit of an advantage in a strange way in that it is out of the way. There was not a lot of distraction. There's not a lot to do. And there is also a benefit of not being an industry town. You have fewer pressures.
So these guys originally worked at the Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals. Later on, they created their own studio, the Muscle Shoals Sound Studio. What was that transition like going from being session musicians to actually owning a studio?
As I understand it, it was a little bit of a surprise at first because they were busy from the get-go. You know, in the book I write about starting with Cher's 3614 Jackson Highway album, which was not a commercial success, although it was a critically beloved. But it took several months for the first hit. And I believe it was Jimmy Johnson who said to me, you know, we were always busy, but it didn't quite occur to us that it would take a little time to generate that buzz. And so that's a real change when you're the owner versus the hired gun.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that Cher album. that was really interesting. It was sort of, I mean, that's not what we think of when we think of Cher, her music, or sort of this sort of little cul-de-sac on her career.
I think that's a great phrase for a sort of cul-de-sac on her career. I really like that album a lot. It's mostly covers of a lot of songs that we've heard before, but this may seem lazy to say 60s vibe because, well, it was recorded in the 60s, but that is really evocative of the music of the time. There's sort of almost that protest sound that I really love from that era.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I've got to beware. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
It is just a little gem, in my opinion. It's really a fun, fun listen.
Well, I'll talk about a couple of the other musicians that crossed paths there with the Swampers. Lynyrd Skynyrd, of course, is known for Sweet Home Alabama. That wasn't actually recorded there, but they did record Freebird, one of their other well-known songs.
And, you know, the whole Lynyrd Skynyrd story is fascinating to me for a couple of reasons. One, I just love Lynyrd Skynyrd. I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. That's where I grew up, and that's where they're from. But that was the first studio they ever recorded in. And that album was not released until many, many years later, after the infamous plane crash that took the lives of many of the band members. And so there are two versions of Freebird. There's the iconic version that we hear on the radio that we know so well that I personally love quite a bit. But then there is the version that they recorded in the early 70s in Muscle Shoals. And it is really interesting to listen to what we know and love of Lynyrd Skynyrd and then also pull up this album that's almost like a time capsule. It's super early Skynyrd. They were learning as they went. And really, you get to see some great maturation from the band, but also that early stuff is wonderful too.
Something else that jumped out to me or I thought was interesting was Paul Simon recorded several songs there. And here you have someone tied very closely to New York as part of his identity and part of his music. But the music that he produced there does have that bluesy, swampy sound to it, and it's an interesting combination.
There's been some hard feelings here about some words that was said. Been some hard feelings here, and what is more?
You know, he went down there thinking he was going to record one song. He had booked the studio for 4 days. And they knocked that out in the first day, so they ended up getting through several songs. But one of my favorite moments in researching the book was actually talking with Jimmy Johnson, one of the Swampers, in his studio. He said, oh, well, let me play a few songs for you, and pulled out a Paul Simon album and just sat there playing air guitar to this song that he had played on some 40 years earlier, and I was just pinching myself, like, this is not real life. How did I end up here? This is fantastic.
I think it's worth noting, too, that the Swampers, these were four guys who were white guys, and they were recording a lot with black musicians, soul musicians, Aretha Franklin, the Staple Singers. How did that dynamic play out at times?
That is, to me, one of the most fascinating things about this area because, of course, a lot of this was happening up in northwest Alabama while there was so much turmoil down here in Birmingham. And for the most part, it worked. There was an incident with Aretha Franklin where she recorded, and this was back in the Fame Studios days, she recorded part of a song in the Shoals. Her then-husband got into a fight with Rick Hall of Fame Studios, and they never recorded in Alabama again. But the musicians were so good and worked so well with Aretha that the record label flew them to New York to record with her for years and years to come. Now, I've been told that there were definitely people who did not like that these white guys were recording with these black people, but that they liked the music, and so they could get away with it.
I understand that there were some musicians who came to Alabama and were surprised to see that these were the guys who backed up Aretha Franklin.
Absolutely. There were many producers accused of lying to their artists. I believe Rod Stewart was one of those who took his producer out and said, seriously, you think you're pulling this over on me? And nope, these were the guys. So they didn't look like what you expected, but they sounded exactly like you wanted.
There were many artists that came through either the Fame Studios and the Muscle Shoals Sound Studio, at times 8 recording studios in Muscle Shoals. What do you think the Swampers part of that is? I guess a different way of asking that is, if it weren't for the Swampers, what wouldn't have happened or what would be different?
You know, I think that one of the things that makes them so special is that you saw that you could do this and you could do it in Sheffield, Alabama. They did tour a little bit backing the band Traffic, for example, and while that's cool, they found that we don't have to go to New York to make a career as musicians. We can stay at home and have families and have kids and be able to have this great career without taking it on the road. And that's really something different than what we think of when we think of rock and roll musicians.